If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
It's extra time.
He shoots and it's a goal.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast / video. It's me, Patrick Van Straten, your host for today. And we've got a very special treat for you this week. It's newcomer to the screen, star of stage and screen of the future. It's Henry Hill. Hey, Henry, how you doing?
Hello, thank you. Thank you for that introduction. It's been a long time coming, so here I am.
This is your first on-screen appearance since Goodfellas, as I recall.
That's right. It's a bit like Joe Pesci. I had a bit of time off, sort of waited for the right role to come up. And I finally have this opportunity. The last time I was on screen, I don't know if people saw, but I was involved in the pilot of a new quiz show where you teased me about my pronunciation of Immobile. So I'm hoping we can move on from that and this will be a bit more friendly. That could be tricky because we're discussing a lot of foreign players as well. So we'll see how it goes.
It was more that it was unexpected, your pronunciation. Like you stopped and you were like, I know the answer. And I was like, I know he knows the answer. And in my mind, I was already hearing Immobile and you went, Immobile. And I don't know why, but it just killed me.
I think after the season he's had, he deserves as authentic saying of his name as possible. And I think
is that the most authentic saying of his name? I don't know.
I like to believe every commentator, when he's about to shoot, is like, Immobile.
Oh, good. We've already got into some racial talk. So I'm glad about that. So today we are going to talk about French football. This was a topic actually that you were quite keen to discuss, Henry. Obviously, there's been some controversy over the end of the season in France. The French league so far is the biggest league, I think I'm right in saying, who have cancelled their season. They've ended their season early. They had 10 or 11 fixtures left, depending who you were. And what that means is that your standing after the 28th round of fixtures was where you ended up for the season. So that means Toulouse have gone down, Nîmes have gone down, Amiens as well, I think, have gone down. Whereas at the top of the league, PSG have made the Champions League, so have Marseille, so have Rennes, I think. And then you've got Lille and Nice in the Europa League places, I think. Now, obviously, this has been a massive problem for a lot of people, especially the relegated sides. But there's one man in particular who always comes to the fore when there's any controversy in French football. And that is Lyon president Jean-Michel Aulas, who is currently on the warpath and apparently planning to take the French football authorities to court over cancelling the season. Henry, what exactly is going on? Why is he so cross?
All right, so I think what's really interesting about this is we're seeing the fall down of what can really happen when you cancel a league like this. And there's some serious like financial ramifications of this. So obviously, the first thing, Aulas, he's fuming because basically Lyon, as a result of the league being stopped in its tracks, have missed out on any European football. Next year is going to be the first year in 24 years they're not going to play any European football at all. And, you know, financially, he's claiming that across the league, the clubs are going to be losing out on 700 to 900 million euros, which is a serious amount of money. I mean, already beIN Sports, or apparently who are one of their main broadcasters, or have withheld a payment of 35 million euros, which was meant to be for the rest of the live games, which they haven't been able to achieve. So that's been like withheld. But he's particularly angry about this. And just to confirm, Nîmes aren't being relegated. They've scrapped the relegation promotion playoff that normally takes place between the in Ligue 1 and Ligue 2. So they're staying up. It's just Amiens and Toulouse that have been sent down. But Aulas is, he thinks the ramifications for French football is going to be huge. He's described it as, he's saying that they've hung themselves, they've sort of sent themselves to their own death penalty. So yeah, he's really not happy. But I mean, there's a real debate of whether or not he's just really bitter about this because Lyon are one of the most affected teams in the whole process by this, or whether or not he's actually got a point. And there is actually arguments on both sides. It's not really a perfect situation for anyone, but we're really seeing kind of the ramifications of just cancelling the league and its tracks, and then actually get, and instead of just doing what the Dutch league have done and just sort of null and void, allocating the positions. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot to go through for like a lot of different teams and what's happened to all of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing that I found funny about it, and this is like classic, like kind of cognitive dissonance from Ola, was that he said he wanted the season either to be finished by playoffs or cancelled altogether. And I think, you know, like the European places allocated based on last season's results. And he said that would prevent relegated sides from mounting legal challenges. He said this while petitioning the French government to support his legal challenge against the LFP, who are essentially, you know, like the Premier League for France, which I think is pretty amazing. But I also think he's kind of got a point, right? Because there was a story in Le Parisien this week which said that club presidents voted not to suspend the league after match day 27, at which point Lyon were in fifth and would have made the Europa League. And instead, they suspended the league after match day 28, after which point I think Nice had won, Lille had beaten Lyon 1-0, which meant that Lyon dropped down to seventh and out of Europe, which means for the first time in 24 years, they won't be competing in Europe next season.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just really turned to like a cloak and dagger kind of league where you've got, I mean, the president of Saint-Étienne basically said, look, we're all trying to fend for our own survival at the moment, which is really what's happening. You're sort of seeing them all turn on each other. I mean, the only way that Lyon can achieve European football now is if they win the Champions League, which, I mean, they may bumble their way past Juventus in the round of 16 because they've got a 1-0 advantage anyway. They might do that, but I can't see them going any further than that, really. Or alternatively, they win the Coupe de la Ligue final, which they're playing against Paris Saint-Germain. And Aulas is claiming that the presidents of Nice and Reims have been like really petitioning for that game to be completely scrapped. So they're apparently the ones leading the charge to make sure that the Coupe de la Ligue final is scrapped. And that's the only way they could get to Europe. So really, you're beginning to see how the different kind of teams are sort of almost turning on each other. And it's quite interesting. But I mean, he does have a point. I mean, what he's saying about Lyon, I think he accepts that they're not going to get Champions League football. They're 9 points behind Lille in fourth, which is weird, actually, because they've got like the second best goal difference in the whole of the league. They've just been losing games at a rate which they haven't done in a long time. Mm. What he claims is, compared to Nice, for example, he's looked at sort of the fixtures that they've had to play. Lyon have had to play PSG twice. He says, and he says they've played two less home games than Nice, for example. So he says there's a natural disadvantage in the league that's taking place already. And he also claims that because of European football, they've had to play 10 more games than both the teams above them. So they're naturally going to be tired. And he's pointed back to the last he said in three of the last 10 years, which I'm not sure is a specifically good enough margin. He said in three of the last 10 years, Lyon have come on strong in the last 10 games of the season. So he's banking on that being 4-11, I assume.
And also, like, that was when they were chasing down second place. And there you only need like one team to kind of do baddie. Whereas here, they are 9 points behind Lille, but there are another two teams between them. So they need not only Lille to be bad, but the other two teams to be bad. Like, it does seem like I understand what he's saying about the home advantage thing. I think that's absolutely true and fair enough. On the other hand, his argument doesn't quite hang together because one, he's saying, well, we've played more fixtures. You're like, yeah, you've played more fixtures. You're in the Champions League and you're asking to play more fixtures next season as well. And it seems weird to say we're really tired from playing more fixtures, but we suspect that we're going to be better over the last 10 games of the season when we presumably will not be tired. Like, I don't really get his argument there.
I think he just has to accept that his squad hasn't been really good enough this year. I mean, they've got compared to Nice and Reims. I mean, Nice lost Saint-Maximin last year. They haven't really, fair play to Patrick Vieira. That's their manager, isn't it, at Nice?
Yeah.
Fair play to him. He's sort of got them going. And Reims have just had a ridiculous defence this year. I mean, the reality is they should have just done better than what they have. And I think he has to accept that, you know, if they can get to the last 16 of the Champions League and beat Juventus 1-0, they really shouldn't have been in a position where they've lost 10 league games all year in a league which really isn't that strong.
Yeah, agreed. And like, it also just seems like you don't, obviously the financial future of a club shouldn't rest on whether the club president is well liked, but he has made enemy after enemy in the league and it has kind of come back to burn him. Like, I mean, The Saint-Étienne president, Kayatso, I think he's called, he apparently hates him and really led the charge for this vote to suspend the league, because he knew it would piss Ola off. And Nasser Al-Khelaifi obviously hates him because, to be fair to Ola, correctly, he constantly criticises the way that PSG are run and the fact that they've got unlimited resources. But because he's made enemies all over the place, it now just feels like it's going to hit him where it hurts in his pocket, because he's already said, right, that he expects that Lyon are going to have to sell some assets this summer, right? Who does he expect to lose from this squad?
Well, from the current squad, I think, so I read this week that Hassan Mouar, I think their young attacking midfielder, forgive me if I've said that wrong, but Mouar, he's already been put up for sale. They reckon about £45 million. And they're already saying that Moussa Dembele has been linked with Manchester United or Chelsea for about £60 million. And then, of course, there's Depay as well, who probably won't want to stick around with no European football at all, because, you know, like all these footballers, they've got fickle interests at heart, really. So I think these are like the big three players in their side that they really could lose this summer. And they raised a lot of money. But I mean, he's saying that they're fine. He says, like, financially, Lyon and PSG, they'll be able to sort of bear the brunt of this. It is actually like the lower down teams that will really, really, really suffer from this. But yeah, I mean, the problem is all their values are going to have gone down as well. I just love this idea that he thinks he's going to get the league to restart. I think there's no way, I feel like there's no way they would go against the government and having announced that the league was stopped, they would suddenly be like, oh, you know what, actually we will run the league again. We were wrong. We jumped the gun prematurely on this one. I can't see his strategy going through. And you're right, he is hate. I mean, he's one of the most notoriously difficult presidents to deal with in the transfer market. He's not anyone to give a bargain anywhere. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Well, I think that with Ligue 1 clubs struggling for cash, it will be a really good time to go and try and get a player out of there. And I mean, we were talking about this, just how much talent there is right now. Like, if you go and look at, say, this is just French players. If you go and look at like the French under 21 international side, you'll see so many centre backs, for example, in there who just haven't had a sniff at international level of the senior team, but which would easily start for a Champions League level club. So we kind of wanted to profile some of those players this week, right? So who have you brought to the table? Because you said you were going to bring me an exciting talent.
So, I mean, I've gone for Ibrahima Konate from RB Leipzig. And he's been injured all year, really. He's only made 5 appearances. But they're saying, out of him and Upamecano, they're both French. I mean, it is ridiculous. I had a look at the whole of the top 6 in the Bundesliga, and there's 13 under 25 French players across those 6 teams. And, you know, you can make, bar the lack of a keeper, you can make an absolutely solid squad. But Konate would probably start centre-back with Upamecano all the time in there. And he's, you know, they snapped him up on a free transfer from Sochaux when he was just 17 years old. He made 16 appearances as an 18-year-old. And then last season, he made 27 league appearances, and he was their number one centre-back, just 20 years old. And according to like some of the statistics, he wins 66% of all tackles that he goes in for, which is well above average in the Bundesliga. He wins 81% of his aerial duels, and he's 6'4", and he's only 20. And according to the Bundesliga.com website, I'm struggling with this stat, but apparently he is accurate with 95% of his long balls, which seems ridiculous. But yeah, right. They only conceded 3 goals in the 5 games he played at the start of the season. Last season, he averaged 3.7 tackles and interceptions, which was way more in the Europa League. And they're really saying that he's the future star. And you're right. I mean, he's got Umtiti, Varane. There's so many, even Laporte, who hasn't even had a look in at the French side so far. There's so much talent knocking around. Zagadou from Dortmund as well, and also Mukiele, who's another defender who plays for Leipzig. Like, it's you must, if you're from that generation, you must be looking at the national team thinking, oh my word, this is going to be a nightmare to get a game, because they've got so much talent, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, we were Doogie and I were talking the other day about like shoestring signings for big clubs this summer. And we talked about Axel Disasi, who is at Reims this season. Obviously, like you said, they've had the best defence in France. There was also Malon Sarr, who will be leaving Nice on a free this summer. He's been linked with a move to the Bundesliga as well. I think Eintracht Frankfurt and Borussia Dortmund and Bayer Leverkusen are all taking an interest in him. Moussa Diaby, who went to Leverkusen from PSG last summer, not a centre-back, has been absolutely phenomenal this season.
He's unreal.
I think he's completing 4.5 dribbles a game or something. I think he's got something like 0.6 expected goals and assists per 90. Like, he looks like an absolute superstar. And it just, right now, it does feel like France's third team would get to the latter stages of an international competition. Like, they're absolutely ridiculous.
I mean, what I like most about them is you look at the transfer fees that were paid for them. So Nkunku, who's got 15 assists in all competitions this year, Leipzig paid 12 million for him. Marcus Thuram, who's looked unbelievable for Gladbach, who's the son of Lilian Thuram, they paid 12 million. Diaby as well, they paid roughly 12 million for him again. So they've clearly just mastered the art of nipping into the French divisions, picking out these like excellent value players, and then just within a few years, they're suddenly worth sort of triple, quadruple that. Like, the amount of talent coming out is good, but I'll just praise another player. So this is quite interesting. This kind of goes back to what we're talking about. So St. Etienne, at the start of the year, I was reading, they budgeted to finish in 8th position, okay? They're now going to finish in 15th position, which for them is a 15 million euro loss, okay? As a result of that, they're going to have to trim £400,000 off their monthly budget. So players like Johan Kabay are apparently going to be released and stuff like that. But also, Ligue 1 accepts that they're a feeder club. Out of all the top 5 leagues, they're a feeder club. They're the ones that sell the most, and they accept that's what they need to do to survive. So St. Etienne were probably going to plan to sell, and the players that I've read they were going to consider selling was Dennis Bunga and Wesley Fofana, who's a 19-year-old centre-back. In January, they could have got 40 million euros for those, but as a result of what's happened and the fact that transfer market values because of coronavirus are going to be plummeting, you're probably going to be able to go into the market and pick up someone like Wesley Fofana, who's a solid centre-back for 19 years old. Apparently Leipzig are looking at him, like they're looking at every young French player, I assume. And they could get him for like 5 million euros now. So that's where like all these clubs are going to lose a serious amount of money. And yeah, you can go in then. You can probably get like the next generation of stars for like a really reduced fee.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was looking at a guy from Rennes who actually is, he's Portuguese. Or no, he's Brazilian. But I think he's got Portuguese citizenship now. Rafinha, who came to Rennes from Sporting Lisbon. And they're really good at finding these players as well. Like, you can often find these sorts of bargains too. It's not just French players who kind of use Ligue 1 as their jumping off point for a move to a true super club. So he's now been there for a season. He's got 8 goals and assists in Ligue 1. But expected goals says he should have about 10. And I was looking at his expected goals and assists per 90, and it's 0.53, which is exactly the same as Moussa Dembele this season, who's obviously been linked with Man United for 70 mil. And Rafinha has not been talked about at all, as far as I can tell. He's completing nearly 3 dribbles a game. He's got over 2 key passes. He's taking a couple of shots. He's doing a decent amount of defensive work too. Now, Rennes paid about 20 mil for him. So if you want him, you're going to have to probably give them a decent return on that. But though Rennes are going to be in the Champions League next season, I don't really know what that's going to look like, what the prize money is going to look like. You know, PSG are always going to go further, and so they're going to take the lion's share of revenue because that's how it's determined, right? It's divvied up among clubs from the same country. But he just looks like a phenomenal young talent. Like, he's a really fast winger. He's extremely skillful. I think that if you're a club like Leicester, who I've been thinking about a lot recently, and you wanted to upgrade on Iosi Perez or just have a different sort of weapon, somebody like Rafinha would be a really, really great signing. And there are defenders all over the place too. I mean, last year we were talking about, you know, Youssef Attal and Sofiane Alakouche and Amari Traore. And it looks like all of those guys could well be on the move this summer.
Out of the top 5 leagues, France are the most vulnerable to what's happening right now because they could literally get plundered. They're the ones that financially are going to suffer. I mean, just to give an idea of how difficult this is. So Marseille, who finished second, AVB has done a great job there. He sort of brought them back. They now owe all of their players a €100,000 bonus for getting Champions League football. Some get it like a 600k loyalty bonus. Apparently they can't even afford to pay that at the moment because they've lost so much money in revenue. So suddenly, once again, you're going to have to see a situation where they might have to start like selling players and some of their best players move on again. So yeah, I mean, and it's a shame really, because like, especially for Ligue 1, you need a, other than PSG, you need like a strong league. You need these teams like Lyon, Marseille. You need them to at least provide some kind of competition, continue to bring it through. Otherwise, it just sort of gets more difficult and pointless every year. I mean, it's boring enough anyway, the PSG win the league. You know, you don't want to, this, at least this season, at the current rate, Marseille only 8 points behind them. But yeah, I mean, the point is, if they all get raided in the way that they're potentially, this might happen to them as a result of the financial fair play issues, then yeah, the league's never going to look so sort of weak next year.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about it as well, especially with, I think, what has been a significant managerial kind of drop-off as well. Just the loss of Jardim from Monaco alone, I think he was probably the second best coach in that league. And I don't know, I'm a bit concerned. Like now, I think that Arsenal paying 30 mil for Saliba last summer, I think made sense at the time. It was a little bit of an overpay, but I think given some of the players who are going to move for relatively little over the next 2 years, we'll probably look back on that and say, wow, that was significantly above what they could have been paying if they'd just waited a year.
It is interesting that Arsenal end up paying 30 million for a defender, and yet we, going back to what we said, a lot of these German clubs are snapping up these stars, like Marcus Thuram for 12 million from Guingamp. How are they sort of achieving such better value in the market than someone like Arsenal? I mean, we don't even know for sure if Saliba is going to be a success.
Well, I think in fairness to Marcus Thuram, like Guingamp went down and were in a less... He was really their only saleable asset. So I think they had to kind of sell him at a bit of a knockdown fee. Though there was a rumour at the time that he had a buyout clause of like 20 million euros and obviously went substantially below that. So I'm not quite sure how that happened. Maybe he might have had a shorter time left on his contract. But yeah, I don't know. It does seem like they're going to get absolutely pilfered. And to be honest, there's a part of me that's a little bit excited to see fresh talent spread out across the top leagues, because I genuinely cannot believe the quality of player coming out of that division right now. And it does just seem like France are pretty much the future of football.
France, the future of football. I think you've heard it here first, everyone. This is...
Yeah, I mean, it won't be good for the French clubs, but for the French players and the French national team, it'll be pretty good, I think. So shall we move on to a little bit of anything but football? Because that was surprisingly in-depth, talking about finances, Henry. Though you do look like you should work in finance.
I like to think I bring a bit more class to this. I think, you know, your audiences get dragged down with Jelab and Atkins all the time, so it's about time someone brought in a few numbers and figures.
What a burn. I like as well that you've joined the beard gang. Everybody now has a beard at FD except for, you know, like Joe and Hamill, who genuinely cannot grow one.
I think there's been too many skin fades on the channel for a long time. I think it's about time you saw some real men. So, yeah.
Some real men. What, like, just like some real, like, World War II haircuts, you know?
Oh, honestly, the fact that Hamill's got, like, some sponsorship deal with Fish hair gel just infuriates me, you know? I want a sponsorship deal with Bulldog beard oil. Get me one of those.
I can actually hook you up. I've got so much beard oil knocking around my house right now. Right, so anything but football. We were actually talking just before we started recording about how I annoyed some incels on Twitter by saying that I thought that I saw Joker finally and I thought it was like good but not great. I thought it was a 6.5 or a 7 out of 10, which I think was totally fair enough. And like, I love Joaquin Phoenix. I said Joaquin Phoenix is great, and like, I was dogpiled. People were extremely cross with me for this opinion, even though you agree, and I therefore think it's like gospel truth. So I wanted to ask you, what are the films that everyone loves that you hate? What are the films everyone hates that you love?
All right. I watched Annihilation last night, which is a Netflix film with Natalie Portman, who's my, you know, my childhood. Have you seen that one?
Yes, I have.
So yeah, reading that, like, that's one of these films where you finish it and you have to immediately go away and sort of read up on it, because otherwise you don't have a clue really what's happened. And it's only when you read up on it, you go, oh, right, that makes That was quite cool, actually. You know, it's basically this idea, there's this zone where people go in. It's like, and it's changing everything. People are dying in this weird kind of zone, and she's a biologist. It's one of these kind of convenient films where a convenient group of sort of people end up going in and trying to save the world or whatever. And it is a bit weird, and there's a lot of, like, the director is the same guy that did Ex Machina. So he likes these kind of movies that make you think about sort of society and humanity. And it's all about sort of self-destruction, this movie, which is a bit... It's not a comedy, put it that way. And then they go in, and it is confusing. And I read that the producers were really unhappy with it. It lost loads of money and stuff like that. But I thought it was really cool. I do struggle with films that if you have to go away and have to, like, read up on it loads to try and understand what has happened, that can't be a good sign, considering sort of the base intelligence of a lot of the people that go to essentially what. See Marvel films. And actually, no, I actually don't. I'm having that scratched out. That's the kind of comment that...
That's going in.
People. But no, it's... it is an interesting one. But I'm trying to think of one which I love, which people hate. I mean, you know what? I grew up... This is going to sound so lame. I used to love Man in the Iron Mask. Okay, so growing up, that was the film I used to love watching. And it's only recently that I looked at reviews, because I was wondering about it the other day. And I read all the reviews, which were shocking for it. It said it was like a 3 out of 10, that Leonardo DiCaprio was awful. And it's just one of those moments where you realise that you were completely wrong about a film. And you were, as a young boy, I was like overawed by everything I was seeing on the screen. And it's only now that I've come to the conclusion, oh, it was actually a terrible film. I just had no idea growing up. So yeah, maybe that's a good thing. What about you?
Oh, God. I was actually just realising as you came to the end of that I was going to need to come up with something. I mean, there are lots of films that I think they're well loved, but everyone acknowledges they aren't that good. So, like, Forrest Gump, I feel like it has people who love it, but now it's kind of a bit played out to say that you don't. God, what's something I don't hate it by any means, but I don't particularly like The Shawshank Redemption. I've had trouble with that before.
I agree with you. I'm in the same boat. Yeah, I don't. When people when people go like, "Oh, name your top 10 films," they go, "Oh, obviously Shawshank's in it." I'm like, why is that an obvious, why is that a shame? Yeah. Like, there's loads of films. They're quite literally loads of films. Why is that such a, why does that have to be in your top 10 every time? But yeah, I mean, I've never got into like Lord of the Rings or anything like that really, which is maybe a detriment to me. I also hated Spectre. I don't know if some people loved it, but I love James Bond, but I thought Spectre was just the biggest load of twaddle going. And I mean, I'm one of the people that like looks at the reviews. So, for example, the Star Wars, the second Star Wars, which was in the new series, which was like the Rise of Skywalker. The critics all love that, but then the audience didn't like it as much. And that's always like interesting to see who you should be going on, really, because ultimately, surely it's the audience that are the ones that you should be sort of going by. And I think but then the reverse of Spectre is, I feel like a lot of people loved it, but I just think the whole thing where he gets drilled into his brain and then he suddenly just sort of turns around and wins. And there's a scene where he's being shot by loads of people and just with one single shot, he just takes out four people in a row. And I'm just like, he's not that great. Do you know what I mean? It's just you're not that clever. That really frustrated me, that film. And the whole kind of making a family link with Blofeld as well. I think, you know, you've got to be really careful with one of the most iconic villains in cinema history and sort of do a throwaway plot line like that, which is potentially exciting. No, not for me.
That's how I felt about that. The most recent Star Wars movie. Like, I don't really give two fucks about Star Wars, but the previous one I kind of liked, because it was like, there was just a scene where somebody says to the main character, he's like, "You're nobody. Like, you're wondering who your parents are or whatever. They're nobody. It doesn't matter. You're no one important." And I was like, finally, because all the Marvel movies and Star Wars and every action movie or comic book movie, they're all about like monarchy. It's always just like, oh, you're important because your parents are important. Like, you're important because like we made a movie 30 years ago and that guy who was in that movie, he's actually your dad. And it pisses me off so much because I'm just like, stop telling people that they like it's the same with Batman. It's just like, oh, what's so great about Batman? He's rich. He's just a rich bloke. Like, so I was sick of it. And then when they released the latest Star Wars, and so I actually really liked that movie, The Last Jedi. Everyone hated it and I liked it a lot. And then when they released the newest one, they were like, actually, that was bullshit. Like, it turns out that like your parents were really important. And I was like, oh God, it's so boring. But I mean, while you were talking, I pulled up like the IMDb top 250, which never really changes that much. And to be honest, it's acknowledged that it's stupid. But I'm looking at the top five films on it, and it goes Shawshank, number one. No. Then it goes The Godfather. Fine. Then it goes number three, The Dark Knight, which is good, but is it the third best film ever made? Then it goes The Godfather Part Two. Okay, fine as well. I wouldn't put both of them in the top five. Seems unnecessary. And then number five, it's got Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, which is acknowledged as the worst of the three Lord of the Rings movies. Like, just going down this list, like, Inception's in the top 10. Forrest Gump is number 12. What is happening? I don't know. I just can't really get it at all.
But, I did have a revelation in my head that Tom Hanks is one of the greatest actors ever. I did think that.
I love Tom Hanks. Like, everyone loves Tom Hanks.
If you look at his film history, the amount of big movies he's done is just unrivaled, in my opinion. But they're very, like, blokey films, the top five that you've mentioned. They're very sort of dark and sort of brewing and fighting and heroes and villains and stuff like that.
It's nerds who are going to go to IMDb and rate stuff. Because I've just scrolled down and now I'm furious because I've just seen that Interstellar is number 22 in between Parasite and City of God. The idea that Interstellar should be between Parasite and City of God is absolutely staggering to me. I did not care for Interstellar at all.
I'm not going to like that, but that's the first movie I watched at an IMAX. I went at midnight and I sort of went in really tired, sort of thinking this was a funny idea when I suggested it to my friends, and now I'm just exhausted going to the cinema nowhere near my flat. And I watched it and I couldn't get to sleep afterwards. I thought it was so amazing on the IMAX. But yeah, it is then once again a movie where I've gone away and I've gone, I actually don't have a clue what happened. I literally just sat through two and a half hours and yeah, it looked cool. But then suddenly he's like floating around and he's in this little vortex world.
Oh my God. And he's like pushing books out off shelves and stuff. Because it's like, oh, you know what? Like, you can time travel if you love someone enough. I was like, shut up, man. Like, this, I love Matthew McConaughey, but I was like, shut up. This is bollocks. I was furious. And Anne Hathaway in anything is always a bad move. I just can't. By the way, Joker apparently is the 33rd best film ever
made.
That
isn't true. I can tell you now, I can name you 33 better films. I can name you 66 better films than The Joker. I mean...
Yeah, and The Avengers Infinity War, that's number 34. So
Just to touch on The Joker, the idea that they did it... So Christopher Nolan always said you didn't need to do an origin story about The Joker because he was an absolute character. He is what he is. He's like an evil guy. But he's a genius. He's a genius. And I think this is important. He is a genius. That movie gives no indication that he's a genius. It just makes him a slightly crazy guy who gets progressively worse and worse as society gets him down and he becomes more kind of stuck in his own head. But then it gives no indication that he's going to go on to mastermind any of the things that you see in The Dark Knight, which is, I actually do think it's an incredible film. It is an amazing film. But
I think it's great. I just don't think it's like the third best film ever made.
Yeah, that is tricky. That is a tricky claim.
Like that's a strong claim. But like, I don't know. I don't care so much about that. What actually annoyed me about it, every time that they were like bringing it back to like Batman or whatever, I was just like, shut up. Like, I don't care. I don't care about Batman. I don't care. Like, if you want to make a story about this guy and you're like, isn't he just a weirdo? Like, make it. But don't have all this stuff where they're like, oh, we're in Gotham City. Or even if you have to do that, like, stop being like, oh, that boy is going to become Batman. Like, I don't care. It's not interesting to me. Like, I don't need to see this scene. I've read, like, two comic books in my life and they were not Batman. And, like, one was Sin City and one was Watchmen. And I've literally, like... seen that scene in an alleyway where some geezer shoots Batman's parents. I've seen it, I swear to God, 15 times. Like, in different films. It's been reshot so many times. I was like, I've literally seen that more than I've seen, like, the crucifixion on film. And it just seems ridiculous to me. They're like, well, this I guess is the most seminal moment in, like, all of Western culture. The moment that, like, Batman's parents get shot in like a piss-filled alley. I can't be doing with it.
So if they made like a modern day sort of reinterpretation of the Bible, you'd include that as a sort of almost like a psalm, as like a story, an explanation of.
Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, like Jesus goes into an alley with God and Mary. I don't know.
I'd read it. I think that could be the spark that Christianity needs.
You know what? Like, I'm sure somebody's written something out there about how Batman's English butler is like Joseph because he's not his biological dad, but he kind of has to be his dad. Like, I don't know. Whatever.
I am excited. I will say I'm excited for the new Robert Pattinson Batman series. I think that's going to be class.
I'm excited for how little Robert Pattinson seems to care. Like, he's just like, I'm not working out. Like, why the f*** would I do that? It's got Zoe Kravitz though, right?
Oh, yeah, that's gonna be quality. Did you read that GQ article that they did?
Oh, it's so good.
It's unbelievable. I recommend anyone listening to this to search out that article. There's a whole story about him cooking a pasta burger, which doesn't make sense anyway. But the whole process, he stinks of a man who's never had to do anything for himself over the last 10 years because he's had so much money.
Yeah, and he's also gone sort of like, he's allowed to be weird and everyone's like, isn't it great that he's weird? And I do like that he was kind of like, you know, like Daniel Radcliffe, they were like these young like film stars. And instead of going on to just do like mainstream films, they've gone on to do really, really weird stuff. But Robert Pattinson is the kind of weirdness that you can only afford to have when you have infinite money.
I like the fact that he said there's a director who he kept emailing because he just wanted to talk to them, and the director eventually just put him onto his like assistant. Was like, I can't talk to Robert anymore. He's getting too annoying. I like the idea that celebrities can get shunned like that as well. Even like the top ones like Robert. I like the idea. He's like, oh, Robert Pattinson's so annoying, we just get rid of it. I think that's a nice thought for me personally.
Yeah, well, that's a nice note to end the show on as well. Thanks very much, Henry. I'm glad that we could talk over Liga and also our unpopular opinions, which actually were quite popular with each other, I thought.
Great minds.
Exactly.
Is there anything that is coming up on either of the channels that you'd like to promote?
Yeah, so we've got an XI of the 10 young players to look out for on the Bundesliga that's coming out. Obviously, the Bundesliga kicks off. Well, it kicks off already by the time this goes out. I will say, you know, I saw on your tweet, someone said they wanted to see like the insides of how FD is working, especially like now, right now. Involves a lot of us, like a lot of calls like this, trying to like come out of content for you guys to listen to and trying to think of the best ways to like keep you guys entertained. So, you know, the listicles and stuff like that, I think all the writers are trying really hard to make sure we've got like enough engaging stuff going on right now. So yeah, and look out, I think we've got some new like stuff in the pipeline as well, especially on Euro Football Daily. So just keep supporting all the stuff that we're putting out.
Thanks very much, Henry, and thank you very much for listening or watching. Obviously, if you're not subscribed to the channel, make sure that you do subscribe. Drop us a like if you've enjoyed this video, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
It's extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!